breakthrough designation program gives us access to sort of sprint sessions with the FDA that actually helps us narrow down our clinical and regulatory strategy with kind of a dedicated contact at the FDA. So, I mean, if you kind of think about the value of that, you know, there's a one of the challenges in medtech is the perceived risk from a regulatory perspective. Having access to this program greatly diminishes that risk.
Hello and welcome to the MTP Connect podcast. I'm Caroline Jewell. Tens of thousands of catheters designed for adult bodies are inserted into the delicate veins of newborns in Australian intensive care settings every year for life-saving care. But positioning the catheter tip can be challenging, and if it's not done correctly, it can lead to dangerous complications for children who are already critically ill. Navi Medical Technologies is focused on a singular task: developing a medical device to help guide clinicians during insertion so that they get it right the first time. Navi's medical device was recently granted breakthrough device designation by the FDA in December 2022, and the company was awarded funding in MTP Connect's Clinical Translation and Commercialization MedTech program. Joining our podcast to tell us more are Navi's co-founders, Alex Newton, he's the CEO, and Brad Bergman, who's the co-CFO. Welcome to the podcast.
Great to be here.
Yeah, good to be here.
Alex, can you tell us about this new medical device, which sounds like it's going to be a game changer in pediatric healthcare? How did the idea come about, and how is it going to improve care of newborn babies and children?
Yeah, the idea really came about through one of our co-founders. Our chief medical officer is a neonatologist. So she's been looking after critically ill children for over 30 years. So this innovation is really based on her frontline healthcare experience. She's had a lot of challenges over her career. She's had a lot of really good ideas for innovations and solutions in this space, but I think what she needed was a team of people that were driven by the same sort of passion to help in this area. So Christiane met the rest of our founding team in 2016. And that was really the genesis, the sort of catalyst for Navi and the medical device that we're now developing. Specifically, the ECG tip location system called the NeoNav that we're developing is really going to help patients and care providers by providing real-time information as to where is the catheter located in the body at the bedside. And up until this point, that hasn't been something that care providers in the pediatric or neonatal space have had. So this really will be a sort of significant improvement for these procedures.
Well, that sounds like it's meeting a critical need in healthcare for that group of patients.
Yeah, definitely. I think really what we're trying to do is develop something that can make these insertion procedures faster. And that's good for two reasons. It means that doctors and nurses can get back to other really important jobs in their day, but it also means that patients can get their therapy, their care more quickly. And that's especially important with critically ill newborns. There's this thing called the golden hour, which is if you can deliver effective care within the first 60 minutes, then generally the outcomes are much better. So time is really a factor with these procedures. The other thing that we're trying to do is make these procedures safer. So one of the additional challenges in children and small patients is even when you get the catheter in the right place initially, these catheters can move. That's called migration of a catheter. And, you know, the statistics are really quite eye-opening in terms of the number of catheters and how they move. There's a lot of research coming out about that now. So the ability to provide ongoing surveillance is really valuable to the clinical staff. And again, that's not something that is currently really available. Probably the best sort of solution at the moment is doctors and nurses picking up a migrated central line and sort of secondarily on x-rays for something else in the body. And ultimately, if we can make these procedures faster and safer for patients, then we're really trying to deliver a cost saving to the hospital as well, because some of these complications can be really, really expensive to treat when they do happen.
Tell us about how the technology works.
Yeah, so essentially what we're doing is turning the catheter itself into an electrode. So we're not actually putting anything new into the patient's body. It's completely non-invasive, which is fantastic. So we're using a standard catheter that the hospital would already be really used to using. What we're doing is putting a little consumable piece on the outside of the catheter that enables us to pick up the electrical signal through the catheter when there's electrolytes flowing through the catheter. So usually when these central venous lines are inserted, they're flushed with saline. The great property about saline is it's electrically conductive. So we can actually measure the electrical activity of the patient's heart through the catheter. And as the catheters advance, the sort of analogy that I like to use sometimes is it's a little bit like the parking sensor in your car. As the catheter approaches the heart, there's a little cluster of electrically active cells in the sinoatrial node. And the closer we get, there's some characteristic changes in that waveform that the software on our device can interpret and give feedback really clearly and easily to the clinician in real time as to how close they are to the sort of perfect ideal spot. That's one use case. The other use case is really knowing when you're in the wrong spot. You know, that's a big challenge to overcome as well, and very useful advice for the clinicians during that procedure. So the ideal location is to be just above or below the right atrium, so in the superior vena cava or the inferior vena cava, but not inside the right atrium. And the reason for that is the nutrients and medications that are delivered through these central lines are very powerful. So they need to be delivered in a large bore vessel, so the sort of vena cava, so that it can be mixed up with the blood and pumped around the body and diffused as quickly as possible. The challenge is under sort of the current standard of care where there's no real-time feedback, clinicians are estimating the length of these catheters using anatomical features or sometimes a birth weight formula. Inserting the catheter in more or less a blind procedure, there's a little bit of tactile feedback, but otherwise there's really no real-time feedback. And then having to call in an X-ray. And because there's a mismatch of when you do the procedure and get the information, there's a very high misplacement rate. And then the ongoing challenge of migration on top of that is, you know, once the catheter is secured in place, you really don't know where the tip of the catheter is. You can sometimes see if there's been dislodgement at the insertion site, but even if there's no dislodgement, there can still be a migration of the tip of the catheter. So we really do need to be checking.
And does it give you real-time information constantly about the position of the catheter?
At the moment, we're doing what's called spot checks. So it's kind of on request. But that's definitely something that we'd like to look at exploring in the future, is how do we sort of evolve our technology to the point that it could be doing continuous monitoring.
I'm going to ask Brad now just sort of a question, I guess, about the development of this innovation. Last year, you received about $1.2 million through the CTCM program, which is an MTP Connect program that's delivered for the Medical Research Future Fund. How is NAVI using this funding and the program to develop the NeoNav to a point where, you know, you might be able to take it out to market or take it out to hospitals?
Yep. So the funding has been critical for our product development work that we're currently progressing. We've come a long way. We recently got to have a play with our alpha prototype, which is quite exciting. And we plan on using this prototype in an interventional trial later this year, just to really understand the product and get it ready for our big clinical trial early next year.
And Brad, tell us from the perspective of the team, what has the CTCM award meant? Possibly more than just the financial support, but the other pieces of the program that you've been able to benefit from.
So the program has definitely helped us grow our team, which has been a really, you know, exciting and important milestone for us. We've managed to hire a number of key personnel, you know, that's going to help us bring the device forward. It's also been really great validation for the work that we've been doing to date. The networking programs that are offered through CTCM are fantastic, as well as the one-on-one mentoring that we've found really valuable and just helping us navigate, you know, the path to market with our technology.
And maybe, Alex, you could talk about the relationship that you've had with clinicians, I suppose, because this is a device that will be used by healthcare teams, possibly, you know, intensive care nurses and clinicians. How involved have they been in design and the use of or the refinement, I guess, of this innovation?
Yeah, they've been core to sort of understanding exactly what are the user needs. So I think it helps from the fact that, you know, one of the founders of our company is a neonatologist, is a doctor. So, you know, the first step in any sort of product development pathway is really understanding what are the user needs. So before we even got started sort of on the product side of things, we really wanted to understand what the problem was that we were solving. So we did a lot of interviews with doctors and nurses in Australia, the US, Europe, all really all over the world, just to really characterize what is the problem. Then when we've been going through the product development pathway, at every stage we've been developing a product, showing it to sort of a close group of doctors and nurses to get their feedback, and then sort of iterating from that point. So, yeah, a huge amount of input from a lot of people.
So the clinical trial that you've got planned coming up, will that be the first time the device will have been used in patients?
No, we have had earlier versions of our device used in clinical studies in humans. We've done, I think it's two or three studies at the Royal Women's Hospital to date, which they've been a fantastic partner and deserve some recognition. We're at the point where, I should say that those earlier studies have all been observational. So really we've been using our device parallel to the standard of care, and the person who's actually inserting the catheters has been blinded to the output from our device, and really those studies were pivotal to us measuring the ECG signals and gathering the data that we need to train the software to basically tell people where the catheter is. But we're getting close to the point where we can actually use it, where we can actually use our device in its intended way, in an interventional setting. And that's really exciting for us, because that'll be the first time that we're able to train doctors and nurses in how to use our device, hand it over, and watch them actually do, you know, use it as it would be, you know, in its intended use. So that's a big moment for us. And yeah, really looking forward to getting the data from that.
Is it a catheter that's already produced that you amend, or and is your medical device what you would call software as a medical device, or is it a combination?
Yeah, I think technically we're not software. Our medical device has software, but it's more than just software. So there's capital, consumable, and software all coming together. Our device, our system is usable with any central venous catheter. That's our goal, and so far in our testing, that's how it's been playing out. So our product is non-invasive. We're not developing a catheter. There's nothing that goes inside a body. Really, it's that consumable that sits at the end of the catheter and kind of turns a dumb catheter into a smart catheter.
Who's your CTCM partner? Organization?
Heba.
Oh, it's Heba. Right. It's Cicada Innovations.
Yeah, Cicada.
Great. Oh, wow.
Yeah, she's wonderful.
Well, it does make a huge difference, right? Because you're doing something that no one's ever done before.
Yep.
So all hands on deck, right?
That's it. That's exactly right.
When do you think we could see this technology, you know, out in the hospitals? How many more years are we looking at?
Yeah, so, you know, we're working really hard to get the device to market as soon as possible. As I mentioned, we're currently working on finalizing the product development part of the program, and we'll be using that in a clinical trial next year. And soon after that, we'll be submitting to the FDA for regulatory approval. So, yeah, hopefully not too far away.
So, of course, this was the big news a couple of months ago, that you were granted breakthrough device designation by the FDA. Congratulations. That's, you know, a really fantastic milestone. So well done. What does that mean for you as a company?
Well, I mean, it's fantastic validation for our work. I mean, it helps us in a number of really important ways. The breakthrough designation program gives us access to sort of sprint sessions with the FDA that actually helps us narrow down our clinical and regulatory strategy with kind of a dedicated contact at the FDA. So, I mean, if you kind of think about the value of that, you know, there's one of the challenges in medtech is the perceived risk from a regulatory perspective. Having access to this program greatly diminishes that risk. So that's really helpful for us. But it also provides us with an expedited review process at the end. And so what that means is that, you know, hopefully the timeline between submitting our FDA documentation and actually getting clearance is as short as it can be. So from both of those angles, it's fantastic. But the FDA actually has a number of other support programs for pediatric devices as well. So they're really supportive of innovation that helps children and babies. And so, yeah, they've actually been a really great partner to work with.
Have you got any advice for other medtech innovators who are looking to put together some sort of application for this FDA program?
Yeah, I mean, definitely find people that have done this sort of thing before. I think experience is so helpful in this space. One thing that I would say is if your medical device has an application in pediatrics, consider that as maybe your lead application, because some of the FDA pathways through support programs like the Pediatric Device Consortia mean that you get a lot of extra support. Sometimes that can even be funding through some of the Pediatric Device Consortia partners, but also the costs are waived. So the traditional sort of filing costs that a company might have to bear if you're actually building in an indication for use in the pediatric cohort are actually waived. So there are these sort of balanced incentives, I suppose, to try to entice people to address urgent unmet needs in the pediatric domain. So, you know, if there are medical device founders out there where you're building a product that can work in kids, think about explaining that to the FDA and see what help is available.
And what's your strategy with going, you know, FDA, you're going big?
We're very focused on the US market as our first launch market. I think part of the reason is, yes, the FDA is very supportive of the sort of work that we're doing, and that's a huge benefit. But also a lot of the hospitals in the US are very open to collaboration on innovation projects. They're very open to the idea of anything that can help them do their work better. It's just a much bigger market as well. So there's a number of reasons why that's our launch market. But of course, we will be, bringing our product to the Australian market as quickly as we can as well. In actual fact, this is probably the quickest way for us to get the product into the Australian market is going via the US. So, it's not that we're not focused on Australia. There's a reason why the FDA is helping us out.
Can you do everything remotely? Do you have to go to the US and travel a lot, or can you do it, you know, via video conferencing, or do you really have to be in America to make this kind of thing happen?
Yeah, so at the moment we do have a US subsidiary, a wholly owned subsidiary, but we don't have a permanent presence there just yet. However, as we prepare for our go-to-market, we will need to have a presence there definitely, as we work with, you know, local hospitals and distribution partners. It's a bit of a long process, but we're already working towards it.
Have you had any other challenges with that sort of whole US sort of focus? I've heard that there are lots of hurdles that you have to sort of jump through to set up businesses in the US.
So setting up a business wasn't too challenging. Probably the hardest part currently is just the geographic separation between the US and where we are now. So there's a lot of travel back and forth between here and the US while we develop, you know, our networks and relationships with key opinion leaders and hospitals. So that's probably the bigger challenge at the moment, is just needing to be there but being located here for now.
I'm also note that you've been quite successful in attracting further funding grants. Congratulations, because, you know, that is a huge challenge for startups, you know, if you're not listed and you don't have a particular financial backer. Is there a winning formula? Well, you know, is there a secret to your success in attracting this type of funding? And maybe, you know, you could talk through the sorts of grants that you've been successful in attracting.
So I think for NAVI, a big success factor has been our team. You know, we comprise of a multidisciplinary team with different backgrounds and broad range of experiences. And that's really helped us navigate a lot of the challenges along the way. It's also a very attractive thing for investment. Having a well-performing team that's got a proven track record. You know, we've been successful with quite a few grants over the years, but we've also been successful in executing those grants successfully as a team.
Yeah, I think that's right. You know, it's not just money for nothing, right? You have, for instance, with the CTCM program, you have to reach certain milestones and sort of gates. And obviously the program is there to help you succeed and to get to those points. But yeah, you obviously have to have a good track record to attract more funding.
Yeah, I think it's a bit of a process about building up that experience and credibility. So, you know, we certainly didn't start with getting grants that are as big as the CTCM. We started out with smaller grant programs, but that sort of build your experience in how to manage them, in how to sort of apply for them, and how to actually execute them properly. And so I think it's definitely been, you know, kind of building in momentum to get to this point. It's taken a while, but you know, we're very proud of the background and the sort of experience that we've had.
What sort of advice have you found really helpful in this journey? Because it's been, you know, a long one. We're talking 6 years, you know, along the track, and a huge commitment personally when you become part of something like NAVI. Is there any advice that you have sort of held close to your heart to sort of get you through those, you know, the ups and downs, the challenges?
I think you mentioned a key word there, which was commitment. And something I think that we found was probably a real crucial point in our sort of journey was when the first couple of people really stepped in and went full time in the company. And, you know, I think before that point, it was really difficult to get runs on the board and sort of get that momentum. But when, you know, the first employee in our company was Xing, he went over to the US full time. At that point, he wasn't even being paid a salary. And then I came in as well as Mubin. And that's really when sort of we started to build momentum. So I think commitment early on is really important. And I think sort of is the basis for all of the other work. So you really need that committed team early on. The other sort of advice that I would provide to early stage companies is get really used to building a plan and then pressure testing it and getting it ripped to shreds. So I think that's kind of the advantage of working through some of the accelerator programs that are out there. You know, there's a number of really good accelerator programs out there, but the advantage there is you can very quickly iterate through strategies and plans. You can develop a plan and take it to people and it gets torn to shreds, and that's okay. It helps you build your resilience, certainly, but it helps you figure out what's wrong as well. And if you can quickly iterate through, eventually people will stop poking holes in your plan, and that's when you think, okay, maybe now we've finally got a good pathway. The other sort of recommendation I'd have is recently there's some frameworks that have come out that are really helpful for medtech startups, things like the Gates framework, GAITS, which gives you kind of that, you know, big picture view of all of the work that you need to do from, you know, having an idea to having a product that's adopted as a standard of care. So that's super helpful, especially with trying to understand areas that your team might not have a lot of experience in. So, you know, for our team, we didn't have a lot of regulatory or reimbursement experience, but that helped us understand and identify what we didn't know. And that was fantastic. The other point of advice that I would make to other sort of teams is try to think about where you can generate evidence early. You know, evidence for investors, but also evidence for showing to clinical users, whether that's doctors or nurses or other potentially patients, depending on your device, the earlier that you can start to generate some of that evidence, the better. And it doesn't need to be human studies. It can be benchtop studies, animal studies, even like health economic analysis or literature reviews. That sort of evidence is really crucial.
Yeah, I guess my advice would be get involved. There's no pitch competition that's too small. There's no accelerator that's too small. Just get involved, learn, get some early runs on the board, so to speak, and build your brand. It's a really important thing to really focus on early on, and it helps you with investment. It helps you attracting talent, and it helps you with the journey.
Great. Well, we've got some real gems there. Thanks very much, Brad and Alex, for coming on the podcast. It's been an absolute pleasure, and we wish you all the best for the NeoNav and look forward to sort of hearing how it all goes. This has been the MTP Connect podcast. Thanks for listening to the show. Our thanks to Alex Newton and Brad Bergman from Navi Medical Technologies for joining the podcast to give us an update on their innovation aimed at improving catheter insertion for babies and children. Remember, it's easy to subscribe to our podcast so that you don't miss an episode. And if you enjoyed the show, feel free to give us a rating. It really helps others find our podcast. Until next time.